So welcome everybody to the Disrupt Education Podcast. Allie Privet, how are you?
I'm wonderful and excited to be starting off 2024 with another amazing guest. And just to kind of set the stage for everyone, this is a guest that's been on previously, but I have not previously met. Mm-hmm. And I think what we're going to find, you know, the deeper and deeper we podcast, you know, the rabbit hole goes down deep, is that there's so many of these podcast episodes that are like linked and connected. And I love when our guests kind of bring that. And I think we're going to experience that here on this episode. And so I'm just ready to dive in. It's the new year and it's going to be a great episode to kind of like hunker down, get your coffee, your tea and hot cocoa maybe.
So yes, first off, I want to introduce the book and then I'll introduce the author. I think you'll see her name right up there. It's Pam Roy. The book is Parenting from the Passenger Seat, the standard education model we use to prepare our children for life is not working well for them or us. It's time for a shift. It says how our children develop capabilities, connections, and meaningful lives. Pam Roy is here with us, who is the co-founder of Be Unbound and the Viktor Frankl Institute of America. Pam, welcome back.
Oh, I am thrilled to be back. It's always so fun and exciting to be with you and now with Allie and to talk about these very meaningful subjects that affect all our lives. So I am really thrilled to be here.
Oh, I can't wait to jump into this. But before we do, I want to kind of like talk a little bit about, you know, we don't do a lot of books on this podcast. We're very selective, honestly. And we talked about Pencils Down before was the last book on the podcast at the end of 2023 as we were going through it. And what I really like about that book is, and we'll probably talk a little bit about that, Pam, as well, is how, you know, the stresses of teachers and the different things that are happening there and how to transition in and out of education, which Allie's already done to a point. I mean, she's still an educator, just not teaching in the system all the time. What I love about the book that you wrote is so needed around parenting. It's almost terrifying to be a parent these days, especially when your kids are in that transitional right around the end of K through 12, or even like in the middle of K through 12 and then transitioning out. So we'll start there. Like, book, what, why, what happened here?
My life happened and all of a sudden it all came together. But basically I was an older parent. So I didn't get married till 35, didn't have my children until close to 40, or actually my youngest was born when I was 41. And this gap of looking at, and I had checked all the boxes. I was the good student. I got the right job. I was the, you know, partner at 27, you know, had the condo, had the BMW, had the staff. And oh my gosh, it was so empty. I was like, where was my community? Where was my tribe? I always wanted to be a mom. I didn't have time to date. I was just answering, checking the boxes, getting the accolades in this system, in this corporate system. But so when I had my kids, I wanted to approach it entirely differently. I wanted to have relationships be at the center, community be at the center. And all of a sudden, they start school and all the tentacles of school are telling me that my kids need to do this on Sundays. Oh, no, homework on a weeknight when it's grandma's birthday. And I'm finding myself literally kicking and screaming, pushing back. And so I began from a perspective of someone who has been a businesswoman, who worked in the, you know, economic situation and who went back to school to get a master's degree at age 56 and saw what was at college. Again, we've evolved to be a society of systems, not communities. So systems are transactional. They don't nurture human beings. They take the vitality of human beings for an output, right? We are a society of a giant factory model, batched, sorted, conveyor belts, but not individuals sharing who we are. Right. So I, as my children were going through this, and it was really the catalyst was when my older daughter started college, I had two in high school and me going back to grad school, I was like, we're preparing them for what? It wasn't working and the costs weren't working. And so it really, I began writing a blog to talk about this huge disconnect from ourselves, each other, nature, you know, the tribal communal needs of being a human versus this system, the society of systems, because it's the same for education, healthcare, all of it. So here I am. And you've been along for the ride for a long time, Peter. We met with a few of the catalyst points along the way.
Right, right. And you do describe like going back into school and you know, looking at, you know, in the counseling kind of areas, right? And then was that kind of the spark? Like, wait, I've got this, people have to know about this. Was that the piece that was just like, come on, you know, I've got to write this book. Was there one piece in this whole journey, or was it just a conglomerate of all these, you know, these pieces of the system that are really, you know, kind of breaking down our children rather than like building them up?
Yeah, I think it was a few things, but really, I fall into I'm an accidental everything, right? I mean, I don't set goals. I let life unfold and I respond to it. You know, I have North Stars. So I was very concerned about the mental health and wellness of youth, as I know both of you are concerned about that as well. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, how do I help? I'm volunteering at the schools, I'm volunteering in my community, working on different initiatives. Nothing's coming together. And then my younger daughter decides that she wants to go to an elite New York school for a summer program. Mm-hmm. And I said, look, apply. If you get in, we'll talk about it. But I'm not sure what's going on. Anyway, mom, I got in. So I go on this website and there's all these programs, of course, targeted to high schoolers during the summer. And up pops this thing on school counseling. And you don't require a GRE. It was the first online program in this institution where I would only have to go to New York certain times. And I thought, I'll apply. Maybe I could do that while my kids are getting out of school. And what I thought, because I wanted to be a stakeholder liaison between parents, the community, teachers, etc. I thought, well, my kids are in school. I'll do an internship for a year and really get to know the teachers and what was going on. But it was actually through the process of going through the school that I did a practicum. I finished all the classes, mm-hmm. and was doing my pre-internship. And I'm sitting in a room and the school was a 3,000 public school students, mm-hmm. With one school counselor, a part-time school counselor, and 7 academic advisors, which is the new model, right? Yep. An academic advisor needs an AA degree, a school counselor needs a master's degree. And some of that money in the budget, depending on where you are, is going to different places, correct? And so I was sitting in a meeting with parents of a really depressed student and the school counselor, the roving psychiatrist for the district. And they're like, my child won't get out of bed. He's a sophomore. He's bored. He's saying it's irrelevant. He's refusing. He's flat out refusing. Mm-hmm. And the answer was to get him back on track by giving him classes that were going to be easier and lots of academic support. And I'm thinking, this kid's right. He is not able to express himself. We've become so content focused. We've forgotten that humans are relational and need to engage with a bigger world, right? We have eyes that look out, senses all around us. We are actually not made to look at ourselves. The only time we actually look at ourselves through history before mirrors and cameras, et cetera, was when we were hurt, when something wasn't right. And yet we've set up a society where they spend all their time looking at themselves compared to someone else or answering to someone else. And of course, this comes into my work with Viktor Frankl about that's the antithesis of meaning, which is sharing who you are with the world and discovering, you know, ways that you can find out who you are and how you, but you only do that through a discovery process in interaction. So here we've created homework and testing and prep and 7-day-a-week sports and, you know, whatever. when do they have time to go out and really listen to their intuitive sense and make decisions and fail, which is my favorite story, which I included in the book, which is you talking about being a teacher and how important failure was, and you expressing your vulnerability to the fact that I don't have tenure. This is a big risk that I'm doing this, but you did it because you knew it was the best thing for your kids. So I will say I wrote this book not because I wanted to be out there doing this. It's very vulnerable when you write something and you share your inner thoughts, you share your experiences, which are different, of course, because we each have different experiences, different perspective. But I thought I have to spark the conversation. And that was what really motivated me to finally sit down. And of course, encouragement from Elliot Washer, who said, Pam, you have to write a book about from the parenting perspective, because Be Unbound is all about getting kids out, getting them having experience while they are also doing the school thing. So, yes, so it wasn't, oh, let me go do this. This is a goal. It was like, okay, it unfolds. This is what I'm called to do. And hit, you know, it just really, it went pretty fast. When I tried to write it intellectually, it didn't work. When You're I right. set it up and, you know, I put all the chapters and outline everything and I had writer's block for months and I was so frustrated because I had my blogs, I had everything I was going, you know, and then I had to throw it out and just write from my heart about this is what I'm seeing. This is who I am. This is something that I'm throwing out there that we have created a society that's unhealthy for our children and us. But my main focus is the children and the people within the systems too. So,
I mean, so much depth there. And this perspective from the parenting angle is not one that we have really covered since I've been on the podcast. And yet, I suspect many of our listeners are not only educators, but likely parents themselves, or there it's some part of the system, out of the system, the parenting lens. And then we're putting our children typically, traditionally through an educational model. And this vision that you kind of put with the tentacles, you know, coming in once students enter that system, ready or not, parents are, it's going to hit them. So it's refreshing to have a book that can kind of paint a picture or give hope or inspiration to that side, that lens, what, you know, regardless if you're a parent, but certainly if you are. I'm curious because on many things that you said, but what have you, I'm not as familiar with your work as Peter, right? I'm not in the book, but
I didn't know you. I'm sorry. Okay. Had I known you, I'm sure.
So I have definitely felt this kind of pull to not necessarily do life by the book. And I like this idea of you just following your North Star and everything. And I think many of our listeners may, if they listen to this podcast, have that inside of them as well. And so what would you say, you know, if to someone who, you know, hasn't read your book and is interested in it, you know, like what would be some like North Star, like some internal things that they might be wrestling with that they might not even know that the book could help them with?
Well, I think the book, the way I set it up, because there's no how to, no how to parent. There's no how to for life. There's no formula that worked for me. I mean, I've had kids call me saying, okay, well, how do I do what you're doing? And I'm like, well, you can't be exactly me because you're you and you are very important and you will discover what you need to do. And it's an evolving thing throughout your life. This is what Viktor Frankl called meaning of the moment, responding to each moment based on your intuitive pull, what resonates with you. And so I set up the book in three parts. The first part is where we are, where I just set up the context of this is not working, but it's not working because it's dehumanizing, because it's a mechanistic society and we're relational human beings. So we have turned our responsibility over to these systems. And unfortunately, they've taken a life of their own. It's kind of like we released Frankenstein's monster and we're like, wait, which I actually use as an example in the book. And we're like, oh my God, what happened? But, you know, slowly, slowly, we wanted somebody else to handle all this stuff while we'd participated in economic and individualistic gain, right? And yet, so the first part of the book is that. But the second part is now what? And I, and the chapter is on, the chapter four is really about what's a parent to do. Then a example of a school transformation model of public schools that approach students as human beings, not as widgets to feed into an outcome of graduation rates or test scores or whatever. And the last is in the community, which is my Be Unbound program, because really we're always part of ecosystems, right? We are never isolated. We've become a reductionist society, even in medicine, even in testing, that you can take one variable and forget the context of the life, right? And Viktor Frankl would say an abnormal reaction to an abnormal situation is normal behavior. So we're going, what's wrong with these kids? Oh my God, they're whatever. Well, you know, the context. And then the last part is about where we could go from here, which is where in chapter seven, I profile different people that I know, Peter was one of them, who are out there doing what they can from where they are, because they are contributing themselves in a way. And it's not easy, right, Peter? It's not easy to operate within these things. So what we have to understand is that within this mechanistic life that we've chosen, rather than our community lives, which is how we've evolved to be part of 120 to 150 person place where we're known and we know people, which actually keeps an accountability pretty strong. But I think the idea that we've lost that and we're in these mechanistic systems. There was a New York Times article that was so interesting about a doctor who was defining what he called moral injury. And so he goes into the practice of being a doctor because he wants to heal. He wants to help. And he's in an emergency room or wherever he's in, and many of them have been bought out by venture capitalists. They're part of giant business models. They're part of corporations now. They have to see so many patients. They have to collect data. So they go and they only have so much time, and they spend more time talking to their computer, interacting with the computer screen than actually talking to the person. And this doctor was calling that out, saying, this is moral injury. I'm fighting insurance companies that say, no, you can't treat this patient this way because we're not going to fund it and the patient can't afford it. And so you think of teachers who know that they want to relate. And what you do in your classroom about getting kids out and challenged and all of these things that aren't standard, that many teachers can't do because their paycheck depends on it, and the worthiness of our children in society depends on their outcome, right? And so anyway, so I think, and then social workers who have too many caseloads, they burn out. So we keep burning it out. You can't pay enough money because the framework of the business model of all of our systems, including our government, is got a life of its own where they've become the master, not the servant, which is how, of course, we had all ideally envisioned them to be. So I would say anyone who's kind of interested in just looking at this from a variety of perspectives and deciding their personal responsibility to contribute, not who's going to get elected to the school board, who's going to get elected president, who's going to do this, who's going to do that, but what we are each called to do. And it could be a parent who just looks at their child as their child, unique mind, body, spirit, rather than how was your grades? How was the test scores? What time, you know, we become so transactional. We're mirroring this society we have built. And it's very distressing to our humanness.
I would add also as a parent, I'm second generation educator. My dad actually told me not to be a teacher because of the politics in the system. Which, why would I listen to him? But anyway, I think it was a calling. But what I really like about the book, Pam and Allie, is that, you know, the most stressed out students, the most, I mean, you know, demoralized students have the parents that are pushing the tests and the grade scores. And I don't want to blame anybody, but that's just kind of the way the system maybe was acceptable years ago, previous generations, et cetera. And I think that, you know, as a parent now, you know, I like this because we step back with our son and who's older now and just like, what do you want? You know, you constantly ask, what do you want to do? What are the electives you want to take within the system? It's not all going to be great, da da da. But never, you know, you have to have this GPA, or if you don't get this on an SAT or an ACT. And it really worked for us. But I do see it over and over in the classroom where students are completely stressed out and defeated, and their parents are constantly talking to them like they're a GPA number. You know, and I think that's what I really like it from the passenger seat. Look, my daughter's going through driver's ed now, and it's terrifying. Right? So, but yeah. You know, they have to go through it, but then just having them kind of talk about who they are, you know, who do you want to be? How do you want to change the world? Not, you know, well, let me tell you, you need to know the Pythagorean theorem, and then you're going to go do this, and then you might be able to do whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. Kids are resilient, but at the same point, they're very tired and worn out as well in high mm-hmm. school that I see. Mm-hmm. You want to like, so you kind of talked a little bit about how the book was kind of, you know, put out there. Do you want to give a couple of hints on, you know, maybe like you had what we can do, right? Yes. That yes. section, maybe something that kind of was like, yes, this is something that you may, that you'll find that could be helpful in the book.
Yes. And I will say that my co-founder of The Unbound, Elliot Washer, wrote a book 10 years ago called, Leaving to Learn, about mm-hmm. how important for disengagement, because of course this has been going on for decades because we're not programmable robots. And mm-hmm. then he just came out with a new book that's called Learning to Leave, about the ways we need to change our ways and forms and measures in order to transform. And in defense of parents, we all kind of drank the Kool-Aid because we're part of a culture that believes this. So I'm going 100%. To say that many parents are exhausted. They're working their jobs. They're trying to survive. And here's this society that tells them, if you do X, Y, and Z, your child's going to be, you know, have a great life, because it's all you need is wealth and status, and you're just going to have a terrific life. Mm-hmm. And they don't tend to look at the child. So we train kids from early on not to learn to think for themselves. We tell them when they can go to the bathroom. We tell them what they can eat. We do not allow them to argue or disagree or whatever with any of the content. We value, and the whole thing is so insane that when we really step back and say, you can't compare human beings. You know, Todd Rose's book, The End of Average, brilliant, right? It was all about human beings are so complex and unique. And Viktor Frankl would say, we're a mind, body with a human spirit, non-religious, but the essence of our humanness, that's where our imagination is, where we can, you know, animals don't step back and set goals and decide what to do or whatever. Humans do. That's in that dimension that we have decided to tell them, don't look at that. Don't listen to the resonance. You know, and every kid has a different resonance of what appeals to them. You know, even if you go to the Coliseum, I mean, someone's interested in gladiators and somebody else in architecture and somebody else is like, this is so crazy what society would do this. So, and we need, of course, all of that. So we've all gone along drinking the Kool-Aid that if you feed your economy, which by the way is 70% consumerism, which is kind of destroying our planet, but if you get a job, and then you're going to be good. Well, my book talks about that's not really working out of every 100 ninth graders, maybe 24, 28 will graduate with that four-year degree, and only half, 16, will get a job that requires that degree. And it's not to say they will get paid, right? Or get paid to live. So I'm going to say that this book is not about how to parent your individual child, how to reform schools. It's about what we each need to do to create the kind of culture and society that values our humanness and each other, and start building those roads and bridges, which is the chapter that you're in, is all these people doing the little in a school. You're staying in that system and you're saying, I'm going to do what I can to help every child one-on-one do what I can, and also raise awareness through your podcast that we need to begin looking at what we're doing in our mechanism. I mean, Viktor Frankl called this out 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. In 1928, 1929, this is how he actually started. He was a medical doctor, neurology, psychiatry. And Vienna had a rash of suicides around the time of report cards. And kids were killing themselves. And the town was so concerned, it was happening all over Central Europe, mm-hmm. that they began, that they funded to have, and psychology was a new field at that time, where they had the psychologists in their homes and offices. They listed them on posters and told kids, you can go to any of these places for free and get help. And the suicide rate dropped to zero the next year. So what did he do? He said, he was part of a big group, but what they did is they did what's called the Copernican revolution approach to humans. Copernicus, here's the earth. We all believe that everything revolved around the earth, but Copernicus is like, nope, the earth revolves around something bigger, the sun. So what they did with these kids, and again, JFK, it's, you know, Stoics, everybody's talked about this through time. It's not what you get, it's what you're meant to give, that only you can give. I think this is the part that we tend to miss, is we think, well, we'll just tell them how they can contribute, forgetting that their uniqueness is what needs to be contributed. And they're the only ones, as we know from parenting from the passenger seat, that can drive their own lives.
Yep.
So we're not preparing our kids to make independent decisions for all these years. And then we're saying, what's wrong? Why don't you know what you want to do? Because you do it through a discovery process, and you have to have an experiential component to that. So my focus is not to be against the schools, and it's to raise awareness that this is a challenge. But then who's in? How do we build, whether we're in a school and we do what you're doing, Allie, we do what you're doing, where you're actually connecting with people around things that they're interested in and challenging them to challenge themselves to discover who we are. Because the ultimate human achievement is self-transcendence, sharing ourselves for the greater good or community. And then self-actualization is actually the byproduct. And Frankl talked to Maslow about this towards the end of his life, and he changed his hierarchy of needs, which wasn't a pyramid, by the way, that was a marketing company. Yeah. But this idea that when we share ourselves for that greater good and discover, we actually self-actualize. We actually discover who we are, what we believe in, by listening to our values and making our contribution of ourselves.
The depth at which your book speaks to is certainly going to, I mean, hit the hearts of many. I'm sure it already has, and will continue to do so. So I'm glad that you're here again, and to kind of share like your own, you know, like obviously this book wasn't out the last time you were on the podcast, and now
I had
it
a
is.
Feeling it was coming. Just saying.
He's been with me for a long time. Yes. He's been with me.
So for when I think about, you know, when I was in the system teaching and trying to help students, you know, individually, I will never forget this one student walked into my classroom. I mean, just super, you know, charismatic, bright, shining student, and, you know, got to know him really quick, was a stellar chemistry student. And, you know, whenever I would ask him, like, what are you going to do with your life? You know, he's like, oh, I'm going to be an accountant. And I'd be like, well, why? And he's like, because I'll make a lot of money, and you know, my parents are telling me I'm good with numbers, and I'm like, do you want to be an accountant? Is that something you're interested in? And I said, do you like science? Like, I was like, you're really natural at it. You see the world differently. Like, you have this puzzle piece that is just very well suited for this. He's like, I love this class. You know, and I go, I remember telling him, I was like, you are not going to be an accountant. You're going to be a chemical engineer. And he, to this day, tells me that that conversation changed the whole trajectory of his life. Mm-hmm. And he is actually a chemical engineer now. And it's just, you never know, like, the conversation or the book or what, but it was a one-on-one conversation, and that can really change the, you know, even it wasn't the system that made that, it was a relationship that we mm-hmm. built over the course of a year. And so educators can really kind of get hope from the fact that you can be in a system that is broken, but have a positive impact, like Peter yes. Still continues to do in his yes. classroom.
Yes.
And so I think that is really, really important for anyone, because January can be a tough month for people, mm-hmm. you know, it's dark, it's cold, and it can be like hard to lose hope. And so, you know, if you are feeling that way, then I would encourage you to read the book.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. One of the other things I'm involved with is AC groups, which was with Sunia Luther, who was a Yale researcher, brilliant clinical psychologist. She's passed on, but she developed these groups for educators and people who are working, mainly moms, because the, you know, her research showed that the health and well-being of a child was dependent on the health and well-being of the primary caregiver, usually the mother, and that the solution was not for them to do yoga, get a facial. It was to find other women to nurture them, not their spouse, not their whatever, but we used to nurture in, you know, we used to do the laundry together, the vegetables together. You know, there used to be this sharing of this communal responsibilities, contributing what we could again. And we don't have that. So what happens is a mom is a single mom, and she's working three jobs, and she's having to help her kids with homework. She's not thinking, this isn't working for my kids. She needs a beacon of hope, and she believes that's going to work. So my hope is that, you know, we've turned over too much responsibility. A teacher should not have the responsibility. And because guess what? He's going to move on to a class the next year where the teacher might not. That teacher might be burned out. He might not like him. So we have this constant breaking of our social silos in these mechanistic systems. In other words, we don't go to the town square. We don't have grandma. We don't have the neighbor next door who's all integrally a part of our life and knows us and we know, which is, guess what, how you find your jobs today. Our kids don't need a job. They need a community so they can find their jobs within the community and they have the resources for the support. But we've created these situationally based social connections that break continually. You change grades, you change teams, you change schools, you move on, and we constantly throw our kids out alone. And that is not how humans are. And then we're like, why don't you know what you want to do? I have a daughter who had she's very artistic, very screenwriting, acting, got a great job. Believe it or not, she got the highest paying job of all her sisters, which is hilarious. I have a speech therapist. I have another one that works in the fashion industry. And so here she comes out and it's in LA, but all of her community is in New York. Her best friends are in New York. Her sister's in New York. She says, Mom, I need to go where my people are. I'm like, go. So it's about also finding that. I mean, lucky for her, the company was like, we're not losing her. Keep her on, even though they had said you can't work remote. So she's got the job and her community, but she was just willing to put everything on the line in a walk-up, by the way, that has there's no elevator. I lost 3 pounds moving her in, but it's like Stairmaster stairs. Like, they're illegal in California. They're like, the treads are this high. And, but the point being that our kids, and it's Heather McGowan talks about this. She wrote The Empathy Advantage, about how our generation, you know, used to find the job, right? You move for the job, you go, and then you find the whatever. The millennials and the Gen Zs are like, nope, we want our community. We want our belonging. We want our lives. We're going to figure out the job around that. And you're seeing the upheaval that's having it. We just can't really, or that's creating, being created. We just can't measure it yet. So they're saying, oh, look at all this unemployment, which is huge. There's the quiet quitting, I call it the great disconnect, right? Which is the more we become disconnected from ourselves and our each other and our communities and meaning and purpose. And what happens when you can't pursue who you are? It creates a void, right? And that void, Viktor Frankl's studies show, gets filled with aggression to ourselves or each other. We bully, we push, we discharge our pain, or cutting, eating disorders, addiction, we just numb ourselves. And this could also be binging on Netflix, where we just numb out. Why do we have a society that people have to go to work and come home and watch life on TV instead of living life? Why? Why is that how we live? And so, and then the third thing is depression, of course, which is our body, a natural response, healthy response, shuts down. Because and then that could lead to despair and unfortunately suicide. So when you look at the more we have attained wealth and with the more we have been the most affluent, the more job opportunity, the more whatever, the sicker our society, because we have the great disconnect. So my part is to raise a little bit of awareness that we are a machine mechanistic society, but we each have a role that we can't do individually. We must do in the ecosystem of you, Peter, you at school, Ali, you with people in your community that you're helping or jumping into school to help.
Jumping out of airplanes. That's what she does.
That she does. I know. I was thinking, oh my gosh, I feel like I do that with half the things I'm doing these days, but it's not a physical thing. It's more of a...
No, she really does.
I read her website. It was great. And creates these experiences for people,
right,
which people are craving that connection. Yeah. They're mm-hmm. craving the connection to nature. We are dependent on this beautiful planet and we are destroying it. Why? We're saying, oh, you just get a job. Well, what happens if that job is doing something? It's again, moral injury. We're doing things that are contributing. And so it'll shift. You know, right now we've had these systems, but parents need to not support the system, you know, taking their kids and plugging them in and spitting them out, making sure their kids go to school and do whatever. I tell parents, look, if you're going to do one thing, make sure your kid has a life outside of that, mm-hmm. where they're seen as something other than a grade or test score. Yeah. My kids worked. They did jobs when they were they didn't do club sports. They volunteered. They were part with their big extended family, with their grandparents and their neighbors. And it wasn't always easy because they wanted to do what the kids were doing. And where are the kids? The kids are in school. So the kids are in school, the kids are in sport. That's where the kids, but we've created this hamster wheel that doesn't end, because it's all we do then is race around becoming transactional. What time's your sports? Where's your cleats? What's this? What's that? Did you do your homework? And we feel good when our kid, you know, is an A student, but guess what? A students, when you play it out and see what happens to them, they spend so much time trying to be good at everything. They fit into conformity structures like institutional systems and things like that. Corporate America now is flattened out. We don't have that hierarchical structure anymore. We have the skills. And, you know, you just see this huge disruption, which is good because there's also opportunity in disruption, right? Tremendous opportunity. And that's what we focus on. We focus not on being against, but being for, and what we can do in our little part. And supporting each other.
It's hard as a parent, I will say, because my son is so chill. And I'm like, what do you gotta, and I'm still kind of in the 80s mindset, you know, it was like, go, go, go. Yes, we're a little older, Ellie, but like, like, go, go, go. So the book is Parenting from the Passenger Seat. And it really does paint a picture, and then a good picture of an overall, you know, where we are, you know, what we can do, where we can go. look. And then it's just like, I look at it as an artist, right? You know, like you look at, you know, a piece of work, which this is a wonderful kind of outlying of what's going on, which is great because a lot of people need to hear this. They need to just kind of see. Some may be shocked. Some might be like, yep, that's how it is. But in anywhere in between. But it really does give a perspective. And then, you know, as a lifelong learner, a parent, an educator, then you can make your decisions on there. And you've set it up really nicely, Pam. Are we missing anything? Is there anything else that you want people to know before we grab your contact information and everything and how to get the book?
You know, I think that the point of the book, and it happened with some friends of mine, like, oh, you're going to go on book tours and all that. I'm like, no. I said, I'm super interested because whatever these solutions are, that are dependent on the communities or depending on the individuals, and those will vary. Mm-hmm. But so a friend of mine hosted a luncheon for me, a book. And the way we modeled it was, you know, people arrive for the first 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. Then she sat and did, you know, kind of like a podcast, asked me some questions about the overall book. And then the women went, it was all women, went and talked to each other and mm-hmm. shared their stories. And they started book clubs. It's interesting. Every gathering so far, someone has stepped up and said, let's talk. Because the way to go from here is to join together, is to weave this net and focus on ourselves and what we can do, not look for our kids to be the change maker, but in mm-hmm. fact, pull it back so they're uncomfortable. You don't want, you know, life begins at the edge of your comfort zone. Forgot who said that, but somebody did. I have it in the book. And that you want to have a launching pad, but you want to struggle. You know, you want to strive for something, but no one can give that to you. And that's how life unfolds. You're going to pivot. You're going, you know, having our children learn to navigate their own way comes from this muddling through, you know, being with people that they want to be with. Right. And I think, and mattering to society, not just mattering to us at home saying, oh, you know, you matter to us now, you know, be the straight A student. So, or get into the right college, as if this institutional structure sprinkles pixie dust. I have never seen that. If our kids know what they want, I'm not against college. I am against college for all because it doesn't work. It's not needed. We don't need a bunch of intellectual theorists. We need people who can build things and connect with, be in nature and know the fish in the ocean. That we need deep knowledge and experience that we share with each other, because we need all kinds of people. And we don't even know, like your chemical engineer, if he had gone out, he might have seen, oh, I want to do that. That has, you know, Airbnb came from a need, right? Mm-hmm. You go deep sea fishing. BM Bound is not about a specific career or whatever, because it's a misnomer. But, you know, let's say a kid goes out and does deep sea fishing. He sees plastic in the ocean and he says, oh my gosh, we got to do something. He figures out how to get involved. And there's actually, it's called the Ocean Project, started by like an 18-year-old. Who figured this out. So our kids need to be exposed to things they're interested in and pulled towards, allowed to pivot out of it. But we need the free time. As a parent, when you think of the sports schedules and the homework and the testing and the preparing for college, they do not have time to get out and just do what they want to explore. It could be a job. I mean, as I said, I told my kids to work jobs. And they learned about themselves, and then they found different things that they were interested in through that, you know? So
absolutely. Love that. Final thoughts, Allie.
I mean,
it's a lot, I'm sure.
You know, honestly, this picture that was coming to mind as you were describing everything you've been talking about was the movie WALL-E, actually, and at near the end of the movie, they have these people and they are like just literally like laying flat, and they can't even like move. They're on these like conveyor robotic floating things because everything is like handed to them. Everything is easy. Right. Everything is just done for them. And you know, this society that you're describing, you know, and the student you talked about earlier, who was depressed and didn't want to participate in school, I think it's because there's no place for them to kind of have a challenge and find themselves, because it's set up to be this place that it finds you. And, you know, if you don't want to check the box, you don't want to just get the grade and, you know, you don't have that people pleasing kind of personality, then today's school system can be really depressing and not a great place for many students. So the work that you're doing,
teachers.
Or teachers. All of it. So the work that you're doing is super critical. And in the book and the work that you're doing outside of that. And so we're just thrilled to have you and kind of be a light in the January darkness, and kind of get us thinking about ways to be more connected and humanist, and that social emotional component to everything that we do, and look at it from all areas of our life. Education, you know, in the medical field, in business, in our relationships, all of it, you know, how can we be less transactional and instead more purposeful and relational in everything that we do? So thank you for sharing and being on the podcast today.
Excellent. So with that being said, where can people grab the book? Where can people connect with you? And obviously you have a couple of great organizations. You do list some great organizations in the back of the book as well. Yeah, give us the go.
Okay, well, we have a lot. You'll see I've been in a major creation mode. So yeah. The main thing, I have a website for the books called passengerseatparent.com. Mm-hmm. You can get it on any Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any bookseller. It's available. It's available in ebook and Audible as well. I narrated myself, talk about jumping off a cliff, man. That was nice. You know, very scary, but you know, it's was something I'm really glad I did. Mm-hmm. And I have a blog, Pam Roy blog, mm-hmm. that kind of talks about all the things I'm involved in, that started out as my blog, but I couldn't think of a name, and that's what it ended up being. I have a film company that really creates films that both, it's called Straight Up Impact. Mm-hmm. And I don't watch movies or TV or anything. I just happened to meet these incredible women who were producers, who were moms, who were like, we got to do something and start putting nourishing things out there, not all the stuff that's there, and also raise awareness. And that's what created the opportunity to meet Elliot Washer and do Be Unbound was that. And then Victor Frankl Institute of America, which is about meaning and purpose. And I wrote a book before called The Inspiring Wisdom of Victor Frankl, which is a teeny, teeny book, very easy to read, about the essence of his philosophies of self-reflection, about what can I do to contribute? What's my responsibility for the life I've been given? And how do I support my community while at the same time sharing myself and also valuing who I am as a unique human being.
Excellent. Well, there's a lot of different places that people can connect with you. Obviously you're on LinkedIn as well. I think that we talk here and there. You know, you have an Instagram. I love the fact that I saw sprinkles of your blog in the book. It's really cool. I felt like, you know, long lost, you know, buddy of mine, and I'm reading again, and I'm like, so it's wonderful. Again, if you're watching the YouTube channel, you see it right here on the screen, Parenting from the Passenger Seat by Pam Roy. Thank you again, Pam, for being on again, second time. We're starting off 2024 great. Loving this stuff. And really, I think it's all about giving people hope and different ways to just connect as humans. So for Allie Privet, and Pam Roy, I'm Peter Hostrasser. Thank you so much. I'm Peter Hostrasser. Did I say that? Yeah, I did.
Yes, you did.
That's how it is. You know, it's dark here in January. Thank you all for listening, and we'll catch you next time on the Disrupt Education Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us on this week's episode of the Disrupt Education Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe so you never miss an episode.
Are you ready to disrupt the educational arena you're a part of? For more ways to get involved in the work we do here at Disrupt Education, check us out at disrupteducation.co, or find us on LinkedIn at Peter Hostrasser or Allie Privet.
Our mission here is to help facilitate and amplify changes in the educational system through local initiatives and help you scale them into community movements. Our building network of disruptors in education are working to move beyond scores and grades as the only measure for student learning. If your school district, college campus, or organization is looking for facilitators of this work, reach out on our website or social media.
And if you have any thoughts or feedback on this week's episode or any episode, we'd love to hear from you. Until next time, keep pushing the boundaries, taking risks, and most importantly, disrupting education.